Okay, we're starting a new series on Pirkei Avot, and we're going to try to integrate it with the Jewish home. I want us to maybe begin with a few quick introductions. One of the Mishnayot we're going to learn is about, many of the Mishnayot we're going to learn, is about Derech Eretz, about how you're supposed to behave. By laws of courtesy, there's a whole tractate called Tractate Derech Eretz, Masechet Derech Eretz. And one of the things that are a little bit difficult to learn, if you didn't get it at home, is Derech Eretz. And when we learn Pirkei Avot, it is perhaps one of the most important tractates you will learn. The key here is A, to learn the concepts, and B, to apply them correctly. And that, I want to give a few interesting examples. Okay? So, there's a guy who is standing and talking to his friend. They've been learning diligently. It's 1 o'clock in the morning, and they're standing in the hall next to my room, and I'm sleeping. And the guy looks at his friend and he says, "I've reached a conclusion." And he raises his voice and he says, "The main thing in life is you should have good traits." And he wakes me up. And I'm thinking to myself, thanks. Okay. So he meant well, but the application was off. To talk about it is not the key. The key here is to live it. So a guy shows up at his friend's house, and no questions yet. He shows up at his friend's house, and he's at the Shabbos meal. And he says, "I don't see any hummus on the table." So the host says, "Well, we were saving it for the day meal." And he goes, "But the honor of Shabbos..." So the guy got carried away with the idea of honoring Shabbos, and he forgot that maybe he's not so nice to his host. Whatever they brought to the table, that's what should be there. It's not your place as a guest to ask for things. And then there's the guy who, his Rebbe's alone for Shabbos. So he tells his Rebbe, "I hear you're alone, maybe you'll join us for the Shabbos meal Friday night." So the Rebbe says, "Okay, I'll be happy to join you." So he's all excited. He tells his wife on Tuesday. He says, "You know, I heard the Rebbe's available. Can we invite him for a meal?" And she says, "Yes." And so he goes and he invites him and he gets an approval and he's all excited. And from Tuesday already, he's like a Mexican jelly bean. And Wednesday and Thursday and Friday, and everything's got to be just right. And the house is all pressured on Friday. And he goes to shul and shul's over. And he's on cloud number 9. He's walking with his Rebbe. He comes home. He walks in through the front door. And what does he see? The house is in shambles. The kids have been throwing everything all over the place. Everything's a wreck. And he doesn't know what to do with himself. They try to walk over the different toys. And his wife is trying to take care of all the different kids. And everything's a mess. And they come to make Kiddush. And he asks the Rebbe, "Do you want to make Kiddush?" He says, "No, you're the head of the house. You make the Kiddush." So he pours the wine, and everyone's finally at the table, and the wife is all flustered, and they're there, and he's about to make Kiddush, and he sees there's no cover on the challahs. So he feels bad. His Rebbe's going to think he's such a fool. He doesn't even know you have to cover the challahs. He turns to his wife, and he says, "You know, we have to cover the challahs if we're going to make Kiddush here." So she goes, right, I forgot. And she runs, she gets the challah cover. The next morning, Rebbe calls him in and he says, "Thank you for an amazing meal. I wanted to ask you, though, about the challah cover." He goes, "Rebbe, don't tell me. Every Shabbos I do it, I know you're supposed to cover the challahs. I don't know what happened this week that my wife didn't do it. And I tried to remind her and I pointed it out there and it won't happen again." He goes, I just wanted to ask you one thing. Why do we cover the challahs on Shabbos?" So the guy says, "Because we make Kiddush on the wine and we don't want the challahs to see the shame that we're, so to speak, honoring the wine with the blessing." And right. So he was hinting to him, you're worried about shaming challahs, an inanimate object. What about your wife's shame, right? Pirkei Avos involves rules, and they're very important rules. And then there's the application, and the application is not so obvious. People can take every rule to the extreme and be destructive with it. The Torah is teaching us balance. When a person learns these rules, he has a tool, but that doesn't mean he knows what to do with it just yet. The application comes when you learn from Rabbeim, and learning from a Rebbe involves seeing what they do and asking them, and then seeing some more, and then asking some more, and see what people do outside Machon Mir. Go to Shabbosos, try to connect to families. I want to point out a word about connecting to families. One of the greatest assets you can get is when you connect to a family. So there are two styles of how people connect to families. The first style is the classical one. A guy shows up to a family and they're very excited. They're excited because the man has a fantastic story about his tshuva process. He was once upon a time an astronaut. He was once upon a time the head of the ping pong in all of China. He was once upon a time the master of zoology throughout all of Africa. He's got fascinating stories. He left a career being a top astronaut just to be Chozer B'tshuva. He was in MIT and he was Chozer B'tshuva. So they get all excited over him, right? He's a ger. And they say, oh my gosh, I never met a real life ger. Can I touch you? Right? So they're very excited over him. And he enjoys the attention. And so he shows up for meals and he enjoys the meals and says thank you and leaves. And then on Pesach he shows up for the Seder and says thank you and leaves. And when he needs some help, maybe he needs an extra blanket, maybe he needs a computer, maybe. So he shows up and he asks for a favor here and a favor there. And there's this amazing relationship where they give and he takes. So that's the classical relationship, which is wrong. The right relationship is, if you want to be a part of a family, you have to give. You can't only receive. You want to be a real part of the family, then you show up and call them 2 weeks before Pesach and say, can I help you clean your oven? Can I help you with your shopping? Maybe I can help you carry the stuff. There's a lot of shopping for Pesach. Can I help you with your cleaning the car? No questions, Gilad. You end the meal, help clear the table, help sweep the floor. You want to be a part of family? Part of family means you give. You don't only receive. And I merited to see a lot in Rav Mordechai Eliyahu's house because I used to take out the garbage. When I came to Rav Mordechai Eliyahu's house and I'd ask a shayla, after I'd ask the shayla, they were an old couple, right? So I'd say, can I just take out the garbage? And they'd be like, no, God forbid. And I'd say, what do you mean? You're going to take out the garbage? No, don't worry, our grandkids are. I said, what do you care? And I'd take the garbage and I'd take it out. And every time I'd come for a shayla, I'd take out the garbage. And I looked for opportunities to do things that I could be of help. You want to connect? Try to find ways to connect by giving, not only receiving. Yes, there's no choice. On some level, you're going to have to receive. You don't have a kitchen, you can't cook. They do have a kitchen. But you'll learn and you'll connect when you give. And part of what you have to pay attention to is the balance. The balance. Every year, we try to have some guests for the Seder. And many years, we get the same reaction when the guests leave. And that is, I learned so much from the Seder. And I'm waiting to hear which Dvar Torah did I say that touched them. And they almost always say, you were so calm. You let the kids do whatever they want practically. You told them stories on their level. It was amazing to see how you didn't get uptight about the four cups. You didn't get uptight if they weren't holding the place. Why should you be uptight? Torah and mitzvos is a beautiful thing. Why? Because our guests are very often geirim and chozer b'tshuva. And part of what happens when you're chozer b'tshuva is you're very intense about the Torah and mitzvos you've learned. Well, that intensity is not good for the family. It's destructive. Children need to grow up in a pleasant home. Children need to grow up in a warm home. Children need to grow up in a loving home. And the Torah has to be just the way we do things. We don't fight about it. It's just the way we live. It's a given. They don't need that intensity. And now, it's not easy to gain that. As we learn Pirkei Avot, I will try to bring as many examples as possible. I encourage you, go to people's homes and pay attention to the calm Torah observance that goes on. The intensity is destructive. Maybe in yeshiva it's good to be intense and grab every minute. Maybe. But in a home, we need to have pleasantness. And we will take the examples of the Mishnayot and try to analyze their practical applications. Part one, we're beginning the first Mishnah. We said no questions. Moshe, not no questions. Write them down and ask them later. Write them down. You'll have maybe when we break or maybe Thursday night. Right now we got to get a flow of thought. And I recommend for the future, bring your own Mishnayot. Get a Mishnah you could write in. It's another asset. You should try to build your libraries. The books you have and the books you write in will ultimately build yourself and build your families. Try to start acquiring the books you learn in. It's one of the assets you gain. Moshe Kibel Torah Misinai. We begin the first chapter, the first Mishnah. This tractate is called Tractate Avot. Our stress over here is many wise people wrote their systems, but our system, the balanced system of Torah, is a tradition. The Gra writes that in ancient times they had a tractate on traits. Every trait had its tractate. There were whole tractates analyzing how you're supposed to be a modest person, a kind person, a patient person. Every trait had a tractate. This was analyzed and discussed among the rabbis, and they broke it down. What's our tradition? What's the correct way to be humble? Does humble mean I don't know I exist? You know, I spoke to my kids about self-worth this past Shabbos. And one of the kids said, self-worth. Self-worth. On each trait, each attribute, each trait, each midah had a tractate. And so I spoke to the kids about self-worth, and one of the kids says to me, where do you draw the line between arrogance and self-worth? That's a good question. It's a good question. When does it become arrogant? So we stress in the beginning of this tractate, in the beginning of this masechet, we speak about the idea that even our traits are a tradition. It's not just, hey, I think you should be like this. Well, tomorrow I might think differently. So the greatness of this tractate, this masechet, is that it's tradition. It's not my thoughts or his thoughts or someone else's thoughts. It's tradition, and that's why the masechet begins. Moshe kibel Torah miSinai. Moshe received the Torah from the Ribbon Shalom, who revealed himself at Sinai. Umsara li Yoshua, he gave the tradition over to his disciple Yoshua bin Nun, who was the leader after Moshe died. The Yoshua lazkenim, Yoshua gave it to the elders who led the Jewish people after him. The elders gave it to the prophets who led the Jewish people generation after generation until the period of the second Beit HaMikdash, where prophecy ended. The beginning of the second Beit HaMikdash era, our leaders were Ezra, Nehemiah, Zerubbabel, and the great assembly of 120 rabbis. And so that great assembly is called Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, the men of the great assembly. They're the ones who instituted one version of prayer. Until the beginning of the second Beit HaMikdash, we everyone would pray in their own language, and not in their own language as much as in their own words. And the men of the great assembly established prayer and blessings and much of the Torah the way we know it. Hem hameru shelosha dvarim. The men of the great assembly said three things. Hevu metunim badin. Be slow to judge. Be slow to judge. So there's a famous story about a man who left his wife for many years to work. And when he came back, it was the middle of the night. He comes to his house and he sees the house is in ruins, everything's dark. He looks through the window and he sees his wife, how much she's aged. But what he sees is there's a young man in bed next to her. And he sees the young man, he draws his sword, he says, I'm going to kill them both now. I've been working my head off for my wife all these years. Well, this is what I find. And then he decides he's going to sleep on it. He's not going to kill her tonight. And so he comes the next morning. He doesn't knock. He slams open the door. His wife and the young man are sitting eating breakfast. He draws his sword. He says, I'm going to kill both of you. And his wife says, who are you? And he says, you don't remember me? I'm your husband. She says, boy, you've aged. He goes, yeah. So you took a young man instead of me? She says, what young man? He goes, that boy. And she says, that's your son. He didn't recognize his own son. He forgot when he left. He remembered his son this big. They were freezing. They had no heat. So they cuddled up together at the night. So now he almost killed his wife and son. But what would have happened had he not waited? The rule in life, evu mitunim badin. It was late and dark. It was 1:45 in the morning last week. My son calls me up and he says, I just got back from the trip. Can you come pick me up? So I got out of bed and I could barely see straight. And I went out to where he told me he was waiting. And I'm on my way. My wife calls and tells me, you know, he says that the guys on the trip, they didn't daven Ma'ariv yet. So they're going down the block. There's a shul. They're going to daven there. So I said, I know I should have slept 10 minutes before going to pick him up. Okay. So I go down to the shul, and they're not there. And I'm looking, where could they be? Maybe they're inside, upstairs, downstairs. I finish looking, I decide, okay. The bus pulls up, and they start getting off the bus. And I said to myself, so he lied to me. He said he's already here. And I rushed out, and I rushed out of bed, and he just lied to me. Now they showed up. He figured, I'll tell you I'm here, so this way you come out right away. And instead, now I'm going to have to sit and wait here another 20 minutes. He comes off the bus with his friends, and I'm seething. And I said, don't yell at him in front of his friends. And you don't know. I said, I think I do know. And I said, but I don't know. So I smiled. I was actually a good Abba that moment, right? I said, wow, how was your trip? And he goes, great. And I said, what happened? I thought you said you got here 10 minutes ago. So he goes, we did. I said, really? The bus just pulled up. So he goes, no. We all got off the bus, and then we realized we didn't daven. And the driver realized he didn't daven either. So he told us, reload the bus. We reloaded the bus, and we came down here. So he didn't lie to me, right? He had told the truth. I was the dodo bird. I right away judged him unfavorably. But at least I kept to the Mishnah. I waited. I didn't say anything, right? He didn't... So he went to daven and I went to learn. Now, I said, what am I going to learn? I got 15 minutes. I can't see straight. So I took a Gemara that I learned 15 or 20 times and never understood. There's a page in Tractate Nedarim, which I've been learning since I was 18, and I couldn't make heads or tails of it. I said, I'll try. I don't think I can understand anything else. And for the first time in 15, 20 years, 25 years, I actually understood that page of Gemara. 25 years I've been trying to get to understand that page. That night I understood it. And I credited it. I said to myself, you see, you didn't yell at him, so the Rebbe Shlomo gave you a freebie. You see? you got a page you didn't get. Hevu mitunim badin. The Mishnah warns us, be patient before you give ruling. Wait. Now, this Mishnah is important when you don't feel like it. The Mishnah is telling you, wait before you decide, wait before you call just judgment. Now, this is true when you read an article about someone. This is true when you hear a rumor about someone. This is true when your kids tell you a story. This is true when you're upset at your spouse. This is true all the time. Hevu metunim, be patient, badin, before you make a decision and give ruling. And establish many students. A person has a responsibility to establish students. Every one of you knows more than some people. You're in Machon Meir because you want to learn. But for sure there are people who know less than you. If you know Aleph Beis, there are people who don't. If you know how to read, there are people who don't. A person has to establish students. There's a rabbi here in Israel who helped thousands of people do tshuva, and he tells about himself that he was teaching people Torah and he was still shaving with a razor. He hadn't yet learned that mitzvah. But what he did learn, he taught others. So he was shaving with a razor and he was teaching. Look, if you can get a teacher who doesn't shave with a razor, then get one. I'm all for it. But the bottom line is that part of our role in this world is also to pass on what we know to others. So I don't have to go out and you know, we had a student who used to spend his Thursdays going out to Ben Yehuda to teach Torah. That's not your job right now. You got to learn and learn and learn. However, at every point in one's life, one's supposed to take a tithe of their time to teach. One-tenth of our time should be invested in teaching people who know less than us. This is true for all the time, throughout our life. One-tenth of the time we learn Torah should be given to people who know less than us. You don't have to go and teach the guy who knows 10 times less than you. It could be a guy who knows a little less than you. But one-tenth of our time should be there. Va'asu siyag la'Torah, and make yourself boundaries in Torah. Don't wait. Don't run till the limit. If a person knows that shul starts at 7 o'clock, try to be there 10 to 7. You know that when you walk in at 7, you always walk in at 7:02. You're always walking in late. You know that if you wait to shave till the last few minutes before Shabbos, you run into a question and then you don't always shave for Shabbos. So, a susiag, a person should make himself his own boundary in Torah. Now, these rules are also true within the home. To be patient. To be patient. We don't really understand what's going on in our own home. A man never fully understands his wife. Never. You could be married till 120. You don't really know what's going on. And a wife doesn't fully understand her husband either. There was a woman who was married to one of the greatest people, probably the greatest person of all time. She was married to him. So you'd think she knew him better than anyone else. But what did she think? He's like every other one else. She never realized he was different than everyone. How could that be? Zipporah is married to Moshe. She didn't realize every other prophet doesn't shine. Moshe Rabbeinu shines, right? And yet, Zipporah thinks, if Aaron didn't leave his wife, and Miriam didn't leave her husband, even though they were prophets, then why did Moshe have to leave me because he's a prophet? Zipporah, don't you realize Moshe is different than all the other prophets? How did she not realize? So Moshe was very humble. And his wife didn't, obviously, or Miriam and Aaron didn't. We have to be patient. We don't really know what's going on by our spouse. And again, this rule is relevant when you don't want to apply it. As that famous t-shirt says, right, I was once a member of a teacher's organization. They used to sell us this t-shirt that said, a child needs your love the most when he deserves it the least. So a woman once told me, you should put that out. A wife needs your love the most when she deserves it the least. Patience. Patience means I think the other side is wrong. I'm still going to be patient. Shimon HaTzadik Haya Misharei Knesset HaGdola. Shimon the pious was the great Kohen Gadol that when Alexander the Great came against Jerusalem, the Samaritans had convinced him to come and destroy Jerusalem, that the Jewish people were not faithful to him. And Shimon went out in his royal garb, the garb of the Kohen Gadol, and Alexander bowed before him. He said, whenever he goes to war, before he goes to war, the night beforehand, an angel appears to him and looks just like that rabbi. And so he bowed before Shimon HaTzadik, and he promised him he would not destroy the Beit HaMikdash. He was Mishir Eknes Tagdola. He was a remnant. He was a leftover from the men of the great assembly. Vaya Omer used to say, Al Shelosha Devarim HaOlam Omed, the world stands on three things, Al HaTorah, Al HaAvodah, Al Gmilut Chasadim, on learning Torah, on working and praying, and on doing acts of kindness. That's what the world stands on, and every Jew has to incorporate those three into his life. Torah. I had a phenomenal conversation last week with a young man. I said to the guy, you know, we're trying to develop the Beis Medrash. He's married. He works very hard. He doesn't have a free minute throughout his day. He's in Olei Chadash. He's still trying to figure out how things work here. I said to him, can I set you up with a chavrusa? He said, yes. I said, you know, we're trying to strengthen the Beis Medrash. What night works for you? So he answered, Rabbi, I should learn every night. I was blown away. That's the right answer. Should learn every night. I didn't want to do overkill, but he's right. He should learn every night. Every one of us should learn every night. Shimon HaTzadik told us there are three things the world stands on. Torah, number one. Every day of our life we have to figure out where we fit in Torah. It's something that has to be there every day. If you're not going up in life, you're going down. We have to figure out where we can incorporate Torah. Now, Hashem created women that whenever you leave them, it's hard for them. Could be you're going to take out the garbage. Your wife is going to say, just a second. And you're going to stand there thinking, I'm going to be back in 10 seconds. What's so important? That's how Hashem created women. When you leave, it's hard for them. And they will always tell you something, and you're running to catch that bus, and you're running to make that meeting, and she doesn't even know what she wants. But it's like, don't leave me. She doesn't say those words. She says, she wants to tell you one more thing. What she really wants is, give me a goodbye kiss. Tell me you're going to miss me. Tell me it's hard for you to leave. The rule is, a wife always needs to hear it's hard for you to leave. You should never walk away without telling her, you know, I'm going to miss you. You know, it's hard for me to leave. Even if deep down inside, you've been waiting for this minute. Okay? But the message she needs to hear is, you want to be there. If she knows that she's important to you and you want to be there, then she'll be okay when you go to learn. One of the keys is to try and incorporate Torah at times that don't conflict with the home. When we first got married, I would go to Daven Ma'ariv Matzei Shabbos, and then I'd sit and learn for an hour. And I'd come back after Ma'ariv, which took 10 to 12 minutes, and learning for an hour. One time my in-laws surprised me. They came over, Matzei Shabbos. And they asked my wife, where's your husband? And she said, he went to Daven Ma'ariv. 20 minutes pass, a half hour passes, 45 minutes pass, and I don't show up at home. I finally come back an hour later, and I'm happy. I just gotten an hour of learning. And they go, where were you? And I say, I went to Ma'ariv. And they're like, how long do you have in Matzei Shabbos? And I was thinking, oh, wait a second. So they're all looking at me like, Ma'ariv takes 10, 20 minutes. You left an hour and a half ago. And I'm thinking, so? But then my wife noticed, hey, wait a second, he leaves for an hour and a half. He doesn't leave for 20 minutes, right? Until then, who cares? When you're newlywed, like it's not like it's a big deal. Ala Torah. You want to learn Torah? Chazal say fit it in, and try to fit it in before you walk through the front door. Learning Torah works much better when you're outside the house. Once you walked into the house, it's hard for your wife to have you leave. It's much better to go to Beis Medrash when you come home, the Gemara in Tractate Brachos tells us. You finished your job, go to Beis Medrash, don't come home. You want to go learn? Go learn at work, go learn at a Beis Medrash during your lunch break, before you come home at night. Once you walk through that front door, it's very hard to walk out. You should, and that's why it's so important to have a chavrusa, to have a set shiur, when you have set times to learn. When why do you guys think I teach nighttime here? It was part of the understanding that my wife and I came to, that if I'm going to learn nights, then it's only if I'm obligated to learn nights. The morning, it's easier to learn. The afternoon, it's easier to learn. The nights, well, there's always what to help around the house. There's bedtime, there's cleaning up from supper, there's a lot of things. So you have to figure out. Rav Pesach Zatzal told me when I got married. He said, before you get married, your desire will drive you to learn Torah. After you get married, you have to enter systems that will obligate you to learn Torah. You have to enter into systems. You have a chavrusa. You have a shir. You learn daf yomi. You give a class. Remember, we learned in the last Mishnah, everyone should be teaching. That includes you guys. I have a friend who's a lawyer. About 25 years ago, he asked me what I think he should do in order to grow in Torah. I told him, give a class every Shabbos. He said, how could I give a class? I said, you'll give a class. You'll be able to give a class. Give a class. Make a chont. Give a class. So people started coming to his house for chulin, and he'd give a class. What happens? He has to give a class, so he needs books. So his law office started having shelves of books, svarim. And he'd come to work, and he'd be preparing his shir, an hour here, an hour there. He has to give shir this Shabbos. How's he going to give shir? He has to prepare. So now, suddenly, his life, that obligation on Shabbos, once a week, shir. It's been 20, 25 years, and he's grown in Torah. All his children are strong Torah-observant families. They live in a neighborhood where Torah is not such a popular thing. You know, in their neighborhood, everyone around them is not so into Torah. But his kids are. He gave a shiur once a week. The Mishnah says, make sure to teach. Make sure to teach. Three pillars Shimon HaTzadik told us. Number one is Torah. Torah. It's number one. It's God, it's the only one. Everything else is important. But Torah is the guidebook to everything else. Torah. You gotta learn. And as much as you learn, you gotta learn more. V'ala avodah. Avodah is interpreted either as prayer. Prayer is a huge component in our life. Prayer, a person who prays correctly connects their bon shalom correctly. The Hasidim have famous stories about a Rebbe that they asked him about a shidduch. And he said to his son, go to their house and see how her mother lights Shabbos candles. Because when the mother lights Shabbos candles, that's the moment that she prays for all her children. She's doing her mitzvah. You want to see what her mother's prayer is like. That's the wife you're marrying. So you want to see how she is when she lights Shabbos candles. Avoda. One interpretation in Avoda is our prayer. I had a very, very good friend growing up. And his mother once said a line to me that has stayed with me ever since. She said to me, I've seen yeshiva guys learn Torah, but how often do you see guys who really know how to daven? Who walk into shul and their davening is meaningful. And that stung. My davening certainly wasn't meaningful. And I said, you know, she's right. And it sat with me. Our davening should be meaningful. I didn't say long. I said meaningful. As the halacha says, tov me'at bechavana, it's better. If you say less, you don't have to say all the hallelukas. You could say Baruch Shamar Asherei Nishtabach, but at least it should be, if you've said less, it should be with focus, with intent. May harbot, rather than saying, and your Shmon Esrei, you add a request to this, and you add a request for that, and you pray about them. By the time you finish, you have no idea what you're saying. May harbot belo kavana. The key here is not quantity. The key here is quality. There's a minimum we're obligated to. But we have to think, every year I take a different sitter. Every year I learn a different sitter, because if I keep saying the same thing, then the prayer becomes meaningless to me. So every year I learn a new pshat in tefillah. I have a collection of sidurim at home. Ever since I was right after high school, the first year after high school, I took a Yemenite sitter. I thought I'd be exquisite, right? So I took a Yemenite sitter, the Maritz, and then I took the Avudram, and every year I took another Pirush. I took Rav Soloveitchik's commentary. That's a very beautiful commentary in English. The OU put out beautiful, beautiful commentary on prayer. There's a lot of beautiful stuff out there. One year I studied Art Scroll, maybe more than one year I studied Art Scroll. It's not one commentary, but it's still beautiful. Avodah. The second interpretation in Avodah is work. We live in a world where things happen when you work for them. Things don't come by for free. Avos Rabbi Nosson, our sages interpreted Avodah to mean work. And the Medrash even says, just as Hashem made a covenant with us over Torah, Hashem made a covenant over work. Work is also an important component. Hashem tells us, you want blessing in your life? Work. People think they're going to manage through life without working. Well, then they end up cutting corners on their values, on their morals. Suddenly it's okay to cut this corner and that corner, and this isn't really stealing, and that's really not inappropriate, and I could find a heter for this and that. So then what'd you accomplish? You know, people say, for the sake of all kinds of things, they're willing to cut corners. Which corners are you willing to cut? A guy called me up with the following shaila. He works in security right here. This is a story from years ago. He used to work here for one of the government medical offices. His security, the security company he was working for, was cutting staff. So they offered him overtime pay. He should work on Shabbos. So I said, what? Work on Shabbos? So he says to me, but the chief rabbi permitted it. The chief rabbi of Israel said that this is an office that's national security and I'm allowed to. I said, I'm not talking about permissible, prohibited. You have a wife and kids. How can you give up on your Shabbos? What does that mean that a Jew gives up on his Shabbos? You're telling me it's permissible. I'm not even talking about that. It should be anathema to you, the idea that you're sitting in an office working on Shabbos, sitting at a guard. So yeah, technically, yes, permissible, not. I'm not even going there. It shouldn't be a concept that's in your lexicon. What does that mean to work on Shabbos? So the guy went and worked on Shabbos. And he comes to me and he says, it's permissible. I said, it's wrong. And you should eat your heart out sitting there. You should know that I love you, but you're doing something that's wrong. And don't sit there feeling good about it. Sit there feeling guilty. You're not supposed to do it. And so every time he'd see me, he'd say, right, it's permissible. And I'd say, right, it's wrong. And this went on for 3 months. And after 3 months, he says to me, you know, you're giving me a guilty conscience. I said, good. And then one Shabbos, he's sitting there and his phone starts ringing. And he realizes it's another security guard who's bored, who's calling him on Shabbos. He's not allowed to answer the phone. His phone's ringing and ringing and ringing, and it has nothing to do with his job. He's not answering it. And then the light goes out, and he can't see anything. He just has to sit there on guard duty. Usually he's reading a sefer. And his food went cold. And he had a miserable Shabbos sitting there. And all he kept thinking was, the rabbi told me not to sit here. I'm really not supposed to be here. So he calls me up after Shabbos and he says, Nu, do you think I should quit? I said, yeah, of course you should quit. You don't belong there on Shabbos. We have to think about avodah, work, is an important component. And when people leave it on the side and they think, I don't have to worry about it, everything will work out, sometimes they find themselves working on Shabbos, cutting all kinds of corners that a Jew doesn't belong there cutting that corner. You're not supposed to cut that corner in order to make ends meet. Figure out a way. You don't have to. You're a doctor. You have to work in the hospital on Shabbos. I understand. That's your job. You're a nurse. You have to work on Shabbos. I understand. That's your job. No problem. You're a soldier. You're a policeman. There are times you have to work on Shabbos. That's your job. Fine. But you're a guy who needs to make money and you have 500 different jobs you can do and you end up doing the one that works on Shabbos because it makes you more money, then there's something wrong. You have to look for other ways of making your parnasa. Avodah, and that's what Chazal warned us. Try to get work and try to make sure you don't reach a point where you're going to cut inappropriate corners. Val gmilut chasadim. Gmilut chasadim is acts of kindness. Every day there are opportunities to do kindness. That's in the lunchroom, that's in your bedroom. And part of how we decide what type of person we are and what we do is based on how we view ourselves. And we're going to pick up with this Mishnah tomorrow. You guys wanted to cover ground, so we're going to pick up here tomorrow. But I want to throw out at you a very cutting-edge piece of research. There's been a lot of research invested to figure out how people decide what to do and not to do. How do people make decisions? And one of the major conclusions is that we make decisions based on how we define our self-image. Meaning, if I define my self-image as I teach at Machon Meir. So if I teach at Machon Meir, it would be wrong of me It would be wrong of me to give me an example. What would it be wrong of me to do? Everything's okay for me to do. What would be wrong of me to do? It would be wrong of me to To talk bad about the Jewish people. Right. If I teach at Machon Meir, it would be wrong of me to talk. So now, why does a person not do something? You think you don't do it because you have certain values. You think you don't do it because you believe in something. What they've discovered is that much of our decision, whether we will or won't do something, stems from who do I associate myself with? What type of person do I consider myself? I consider myself a part of those people who love Am Yisrael. It's called Machon Meir. I can't talk badly about other Jews. So it's not, you think the reason is because I can't talk badly about other Jews. No, it starts with a real decision-making process, starts with the definition. What type of person do I envisage myself as being? That's what defines how I will later on react to things. These three have to be a part of our identifying markers. When we define what type of person I am, so people say, I'm a doctor. So a doctor sees a car accident, he says, I can't drive by. I signed the Hippocratic Oath. I'm a doctor. I'm not allowed to drive by when there's an accident. His wife tells him, but you hear the sirens, the paramedics are on the way. We're celebrating our 100th anniversary. We finally got a night out. Don't stop. And he says, I can't not stop. I'm a doctor. What's he really saying? My self-image is, I'm not a person who keeps driving when there's an accident. I'm a doctor. Well, our self-image has to incorporate these three things. I am a person of Torah, Avoda, Tefillah, and Gemilas Chasadim, acts of kindness. So that means if I have an opportunity for kindness, I shouldn't forgo it. And I'll end with a beautiful story. I had a roommate, Rav Tuvia Bar Ilan. And he went into the army, and it was an amazing room. Huge Talmidei Chachamim in that room. And that's why I worked hard to get into that room. Now, he left for the army. I asked him, what do you want me to do with your bed? So he said, make sure they know it's available. I said, you're coming back from army duty in I don't know how many months. 2 months, 3 months, whatever he was coming back. I said, you don't want the bed available for you? He said, I'd love to get back to that bed. But who knows what it'll be when I get back from army duty. I said, we don't have to register your bed as being available. There are other beds in the yeshiva. And this way your bed will wait for you when you get back from your army duty. So he said to me the following rule. He said, God forbid that I should prevent kindness from someone else, and that I should prevent a definitive benefit to someone else, because there's a question whether I will benefit in the future. There's a question. Maybe I won't get this bed when I get back in 3 months from my miluim, from my army duty. So maybe it won't be available for me if I give it to someone now. But if I don't give it to him, I'm definitely taking away a benefit from someone. It's a question whether I will have that benefit when I get back in a month, 2 months, 3 months, whenever. I should never prevent someone else from benefiting definitively today because I might gain from it tomorrow. That was an eye-opener to me, that perspective on life. Don't take away. How many times do we want to make sure I should have that option available for me? So he'll manage. He'll find somewhere else. No, 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 he said. They will definitely benefit from being in that room. So make sure someone else gets the bed. And hopefully when I get back, I should also have the bed. That's a rule. So in Gemilut Chasadim, there was a girl who described to me on a date what she wants marriage to look like. She showed up to her dorm room the first day, and her roommate says to her, welcome to the room. I want to tell you one thing that really annoys me, okay? You see my comb, you see my tea kettle, I don't want you to ever ask me if you could use it. Everything that's here, you're allowed to use. Don't annoy me. Everything you see that's mine here is available to you. It's here for all of us. Don't annoy me and don't ask me. If I brought it, it's because I want all of us to enjoy from it. So you walk into marriage, sometimes you want to make sure it's mine. Like that couple told me, the wife wakes up on the third day of Sheva Brachas and she walks into the other room and she finds that someone gave them a chocolate, I never knew this exists, that cost $600-$700, and her husband hadn't showed it to her. He had gotten up in the middle of the night to go and eat it on his own. And now she walks into the room and she sees him holding that chocolate. So what's she supposed to think? For years, this was a sore point between them because she felt like, you don't really want what's good for me, you want only what's good for you. So this concept, what I have, I want for you. That's the Gemilut Chasadim of marriage. With anyone else, it's very hard to be that good. But in marriage, we want to try. Marriage allows us to learn a level of Gemilut Chasadim that we can't learn anywhere else. And the truth is that you can do it. And I'll prove it to you. Every person can do it with their own kids. You will find yourself a situation so there's only one piece of chocolate and you see your kid eyeing that and you say, take it, enjoy. And you don't feel bad you gave it to him. You're happy. Let him enjoy. For your kid, you're willing to do it. Well, we could also do it with our spouse. Only there it involves a certain amount of work. We said three identifying markers. Who am I? Torah, Avodah, Gmilut Chasadim. We should take those as our own defining characteristics. That's the type of person we want to be. Torah, Tefillah, and acts of kindness. Erev Tov.